In the Department of Social Services, Melanie and another, Joan M. O'Donnell, Kevin B. O'Donnell, Sherry L. Hill, guardian ad litem, Appellant Counsel, George H. Edwards, Owen C. Deal, and Rocky Canfield, Appellate Counsel.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Joan O'Donnell, and I am here on behalf of the Department of Social Services from Dinwiddie County. May it please the court. The issue before this court is relatively straightforward. It is how does the Indian Child Welfare Act from 1978...
Excuse me. I don't think the clock is running correctly. Each side has 20 minutes. Right, per side. Mm-hmm. Pardon? Just start at 20 is fine.
I'm sorry?
Started at 20.
Okay.
Mine says, there you go. Okay, thank you.
I think the 10 minutes belong to the guardian ad litem.
Right, 10 for you, 10 for the guardian, 10 for the total, for, I mean, 20 total for this side, 20 total for that side.
And
they split it up differently.
I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
2 minutes of the 20 or 2 minutes of your 10?
Away,
well, the clock is set on 20, so if you go over 10, that cuts into someone else's, your colleague's time.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. The issue before this court is relatively straightforward. How does the Indian Child Welfare Act from 1978, a federal law, apply to a state court proceeding for termination of parental rights when the children in question are of Indian descent? In this case, the parents and the tribe filed motions to transfer the proceedings to a state court in accordance with the Indian Child Welfare Act. The state court, Dinwiddie County, determined that there was good cause not to transfer the proceedings to the Indian court. The question before this court, we are asking, is whether or not there was an abuse of discretion in making that decision. We're asking this court to essentially affirm the decisions made by the Circuit Court of Dinwiddie County. Our reasons for doing that are that the issues were carefully chosen and fully addressed by the Circuit Court. Without showing an abuse of discretion, we believe that the Circuit Court's decision should stand. The Circuit Court, perhaps, and I would assume this means counsel, used the language that we derived from the Bureau of Indian Affairs guidelines. We talked about an abuse, we talked about the advanced stages of the proceedings. We talked about the undue hardship or the undue burden placed by a transfer to the tribal court. And ultimately, we talked about the best interests of the children. Maybe that was not the best choice of words, because essentially those words came from the guidelines, which are not binding, they are not exclusive, and they are not exhaustive. But it was a common language that we used in addressing the issues before that court. The court had counsel submit briefs. We spent time before the court in oral argument. And ultimately, we spent a day in an evidentiary proceeding.
The statute actually refers to a good cause to deny the transfer.
Yes.
The guidelines, which are not regulations, are guidelines, are where you find the language under hardship.
Yes, sir.
So the statute itself is broader than the guidelines.
Yes, sir.
Right, so in this case, The trial court did talk about the advanced stage of the proceedings, but it also talked about good cause, arguably even broader than the undue hardship, which would be permissible under this scheme.
We would definitely agree.
Well, now on the let's talk about for just for a moment about the advanced stage of the proceedings. You know, Virginia has an unusual de novo appeal concept that many other states don't have. In many respects, that alone is probably sufficient to suggest that this isn't the advanced stage of the proceedings. The proceedings just started anew, de novo. And additionally, there's a difference between a petition for foster care placement and a petition to terminate parental rights, which may result in an adoption. So the combination of those things don't really augur well for the argument that the trial court might have been right on that question. But the other question, it seems to me, is the real issue in this case. Is there good cause, and has it been shown, that the transfer would cause, under the Thompson case, if we adopt that, immediate harm to these children? Why don't you go right to that?
Yes, sir. We had three experts testify about the impact on the children of a transfer of the proceedings. I think what is unclear under ICWA is where is custody? Who makes the custody decisions during the pendency of the proceedings? In other words, if the court were to transfer the proceeding to the tribal court, is it also transferring legal custody of the children to the tribe? And I don't believe that's the case. So part of the problem is that you would have the proceeding in the tribal court, which according to the tribe's own attorney would mean that the tribe would step into the shoes of the Department of Social Services. The Department of Social Services, during all of this time, would still have legal custody of the children because there's no mechanism in that process for a transfer of custody until the outcome is known. As the court is probably aware, under 16.1-283, as you go down, I can't think of the exact paragraph, but the court can transfer custody to an individual if the court terminates parental rights.
Now, this trial court didn't actually get to that question because based on the trial court's ruling, it didn't have to.
Correct.
But that remains an issue if the trial court was in error, but if the trial court is correct, it's not an issue in this case, correct?
I would agree with that. I think it was an issue with regard to the transfer because of the responses given by the tribe's own witnesses.
Well, then they were pretty bold, too. I mean, the tribe's witnesses suggested that if the transfer were approved, that they would put the children on an airplane the following day and transfer them to Oklahoma.
Or possibly separate them with one in Oklahoma and one in New Mexico.
Right.
That part was unclear. But yes, that was their intention. Part of their intention also, according to their own attorney, was to re-examine and re-adjudicate the circumstances that led to the children's placement in foster care in the first place, and also reconsider the goal of adoption with the aim of reunification. And based on the agency's history with this family and its history with this tribe, the agency argued against that happening because of the impact, a very negative impact, potentially, on the well-being of these children, with, we believed, good cause based on that history, which was all in evidence before the...
Counselor, can I ask you a question? It sounds like most of the things you're talking about are talking about results that the tribal court may make. It seems to me that the transfer issue is really a question of who should make the decision. And
well,
why does transferring something to a tribal court really make any difference?
It makes a significant difference because their counsel said they would go back and revisit all of those issues that had already been adjudicated in our state court and had not been...
So is it the revisiting, the potential for... Because our state court could have revisited them if they wanted to, I assume, couldn't they? Maybe.
Arguably, yes, through the foster care process.
And certainly, once the appeal de novo went to the circuit court would look at it differently than anybody else had. But I guess my question is really trying to focus on, it seems to me that just transferring it doesn't really have an impact. Unless we don't trust the people that we're transferring it to. And the federal government has said in the statute that we presume that the tribal court is going to look out for the best interest of the child.
Well, the plan from the tribe, as in evidence before the circuit court, as His Honor mentioned, was to take the children immediately and placed them in foster homes elsewhere. That would have essentially had an impact on the children, and that was the issue that was addressed by the agency's expert witnesses.
Okay, they may have been their plan, but that doesn't mean the tribal court would have gone along with it, does it?
I'm sorry?
It doesn't mean the tribal court would have gone along with it necessarily, does it? Just because that was their plan. There's still going to be a tribal court that's going to decide whether that's a good plan or not, just like our state court would do.
Yes, except that the tribal court was going to start at a point where we had already passed. Essentially, we had already had the adjudicatory hearing. We had already had an approved law of adoption.
So you think that's...
Those issues would no longer be before the court because there was no appeal of those issues.
Yeah, what you're saying is that the transfer would give the tribal court the immediate ability to determine the custody. And as a result, if according to the tribe's own testimony, if it was transferred, they indicated that they would seek immediate custody of the children, put them on a plane, and take them out to Oklahoma.
That was their plan, yes.
Well, the question of whether or not they had the authority to do that at all depends on the transfer. If the court transferred the authority over the case, it seems to me the tribal court would then have the authority to decide custody, and their intention was to remove the children to Oklahoma.
I would agree with that.
You're past your 10 minutes.
I was going to say, I think I'm well past it. I did get a yellow light. I'm sorry.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Sherry Gill, and I have the privilege of serving as guardian ad litem for the twins in this case. And I want to thank the court for allowing me the opportunity to speak today on behalf of my wards. I'll have the court know that I have served as guardian ad litem relative to this family since August of 2007, so obviously it predates these children. But my point being is that I've had extensive contact with this family as well as by connection to the tribe. And certainly don't arrive at my position today in a vacuum or in a short period of contact. I will ask the court to note that ICWA was passed in 1978, and I would ask the court to take judicial recognition that our society certainly has changed, has become more transient since that particular time, and I think that as a result, now we start having cases that come before your honors as first impression. I think that there was also an ancillary case, but there was another case as well dealing with a different tribe that came before your honors out of Fairfax, and that would be the Thompson case that gives me some concern creating the new standards that Thompson case has since taken a different route because one of the biological parents has rethought supporting the transfer, and so unfortunately we don't have them before the court as well today. But
is your concern with the Court of Appeals decision in Thompson, or is your concern with the with Judge Bellow's procedure and proceeding in the circuit court, if you can distinguish between the two?
Yes, Judge. With regard to my biggest concern is going to be the result of Thompson because it creates new standards that I think, complicate the ambiguity of ICWA to begin with. As has previously been pointed out, ICWA leaves certain terms to be better defined by the states, and I think that that is kind of a double-edged sword. That's wonderful that it gives each state the opportunity to interpret the language based on its policies and the import that it puts on different dynamics as family law cases and our family law scheme have been developed. So I think that there are certain...
What's wrong with Thompson? I think it's cut right to the chase. What's wrong with Thompson? I mean, it's an abuse of discretion standard that we use in these cases to begin with. The statute talks about good cause. The guidelines talk about undue hardship. There's obviously a gap in the middle that you have acknowledged is there for the states to fill. Court of Appeals filled it. What's wrong with it?
Judge, with all due respect to the Court of Appeals, I'm very concerned that they discarded totally looking at the standard of best interests. I think that...
Well, that's not what they did. I mean, in Thompson, they talked about this extraordinary imminent harm to children as being the lodestar question to deal with for transfer questions, not ultimate custody questions, transfer.
But I don't think that you can separate jurisdiction from custody because, as we previously discussed, if there's a transfer, ultimately there's a transfer of custody as well. So I think that when we're talking custody cases and throughout this commonwealth and our history in developing family law, best interest has always been paramount. So I don't think that we can separate the two.
Well, as Justice Millett said, this is a question of who decides the question and how, and not the underlying merits of that. So the transfer decision doesn't necessarily result in a transfer of custody. However, in the facts of this case, there's pretty serious evidence that it would. So if you're, as Justice Mim said, are you fussing about Thompson, or are you fussing about this case?
Judge, I'm assuming, based on Your Honor's comments, that I'm looking at Thompson a little bit differently. I read where they were totally discarding the overall arching paramount issue being we need to look at the best interests of these children. And I do see the point in terms of who decides that ultimate issue. I think that by a transfer, granting a transfer after such a long period of time, and I understand that the courts have by virtue of the dynamics of a de novo from juvenile to circuit, my focus has to be how long have these children, when were these children removed? They were removed in April of 2011. These folks, the tribe, knew that these children had been removed, but yet still delayed until September of 2011 seeking a transfer. The issues, I think we...
Well, that's because the issue changed. The issue moved from foster care to termination of parental rights. Now, that's a substantial step. And in Virginia, of course, we have the additional step of a de novo review of a juvenile court's ruling. I mean, there's a lot of room there for them to intervene and to request the transfer when the circumstances on the ground change. But more importantly, the Thompson case. We reverse and remand for further proceedings to determine whether by clear and convincing evidence the transfer to a tribal court would cause or would present a substantial risk of causing immediate, serious, emotional, or physical damage to this child. Now, what's wrong with that if you think Thompson is wrong? What's wrong with that?
And I'm sorry, you're reading from Thompson approximately when?
Right at the conclusion of the case. The Court of Appeals carefully distinguished between the ultimate decision for custody, which is always the lodestar is the best interest of the child. But on transfer, they say that's clear and convincing evidence that the transfer would cause or present substantial risk of causing immediate, serious, emotional, or physical damage to the child. What's wrong with that?
Judge, what the issue is, even if we accept the standard in Thompson, based on our evidence, we've already met that hurdle. The concern is
Well, you may be right about that, about your evidence. I'm not quarreling with that. As Justice Mims was trying to find out, I'm trying to find out what you find problematic. And you keep talking about Thompson, and if you really find Thompson problematic, I want to know what's wrong with it.
There, with regard to looking at, again, and I may read it differently, I just didn't see where they had, I thought the language was specific where it talks about that they were doing away with the reaching a conclusion that they should not consider the best interest.
Well, counsel, actually, the two sentences, quoting from Thompson, the focus in a transfer decision under 25 U.S.C. 1911b must remain on the immediate serious emotional or physical damage flowing from the transfer itself. This inquiry is not the same as a determination of a child's best interest in a proceeding to terminate parental rights. So is that the sentence that you think they're completely doing away with it? He's actually, the judge who wrote this opinion, I presumed, was making the distinction that the justices to my left have been trying to make, which is these are two different places in the proceeding, so they're two completely different tests.
And I agree with Your Honor.
So then how is that doing away with the best interest test?
Well, based on the assertions from tribe counsel for their briefs and the like, that best interest should not be considered at all in terms of, and perhaps I mistakenly merged that in terms of my reading of Thompson, but they are two separate proceedings, and I think that in terms of looking at best interest at transfer, some of the same evidence does get looped into.
Ms. Gales, has she finished your question? Are you saying that best interest should be a consideration in transfer?
Absolutely.
That's your issue with
that? Absolutely.
Thank you. Your time has expired.
Court, may please. I'm Lawrence Gill, and I'm representing the Citizens Potawatomi Tribe as intervener in this matter, who has been involved in this case from the outset. The justices, guardian, all the folks sitting at these tables, we all want what's best for RN and TN, the twins that are involved in this case. The issue is who decides that, and I agree with Justice Millett in his characterization and framing of the issue. All of the cases that have been cited in our brief, virtually to the all of them basically interpret the statute of the ICWA in doing all they can to allow the transfer, to allow the social services, the courts of Indian tribes that have unique abilities to understand the cultural needs of children, the preservation of the tribes. That's the policy that would be promoted by the transfer. Are these kids going to be transferred back? Who knows? It may be very likely that they might not. But that's not the issue. The issue is, shouldn't they have the opportunity to try this? And I'm going to get right to the issue. First of all, on the advanced proceedings, the tribe filed it within 60 days at the juvenile court level and about the same time in the circuit court level. We do have a de novo, which is unique. And I think that the way that the Court of Appeals creatively came up with a balancing between the act and good cause was very right on. And I think that it's a very creative and in the best interest of children to use that standard. The tribe could argue that even substantial harm should not be involved in determining the transfer. Let them decide that. But the tribe accepts the transfer scope of the order of the ruling of Thompson. And I can proffer, because we didn't have Thompson at the time of trial. I didn't try the case, but we didn't have Thompson to present evidence. At that time, they didn't have all the evidence of Dr. Stolberg and the other experts, Dr. Nelson, as to the harm of these children. Now that we have that evidence, I can proffer that we will meet Thompson and not take these children and yank them from the foster care parents. And let me talk about a couple cases.
Do you have any concern with Thompson? The guardian ad litem expressed what her concerns were with the Thompson decision.
Thompson is spot on. It addresses also the issue of the adverse impact on the witnesses. There's actually a 44 Fed Reg comment that courts can move, the tribal courts, and they've offered that. That's even better than Thompson, where they say we can use all the visual stuff. And there's precedent for that in the UCCJEA and UIFSA, many other statutes where they do.
The federal regulation says the tribal court can move.
Sure. And that's in the regs. Well, there's comments on the regs. Hoot case out of North Dakota, I think it's called, talks about the transfer of courts, and that's been in the record, and that's why the court erred, because she just ignored that in that part of the case. That should not be one of the factors under the DNA.
Now, if I may ask, in Thompson, Judge McCullough remanded back to the Fairfax Circuit Court based upon the determination that still needed to be made. And I must say, from just a jurisprudential perspective, I was disappointed that that's where the records went, that the record now ends, because I thought that you had two exceptional judges, one at the appellate level, one at the circuit court level, that could have given guidance, frankly, could have given guidance to us and to everyone else in the state. What would be the harm in a remand of this case under that Thompson?
Well, that's what actually the Court of Appeals did. We have a distinct case, and they said, in light of Thompson, let's remand it back. But I think this court still has to address the issues raised as to whether the court erred in terms of that advanced proceedings. And clearly, when you have it, we couldn't have filed anything before the petitions were filed anyway. When Mrs. Nunley was convicted of her drug problems or child neglect or all of that history, we couldn't have filed anything then, because CHIMS doesn't even raise foster care or permanent termination by the termination of parental rights. Those are the two criteria under the definition of a child proceeding under Section 1901 and 1911 of the Act.
So let me stop you. I want to make sure I understand something you just said. In answer to your question, Justice Mintz, were you saying that, in looking at this case that we have right now, that we can look at whether the trial court was right or wrong in deciding the undue delay and the undue hardship, that those questions on the merits are in front of us in this appeal?
I think on the merits of whether there should have been a transfer or not, which was the context of their appeal of this case, which the Court of Appeals transferred back based on Thompson.
We're reviewing the Circuit Court's, the Court of Appeals decision.
What's that?
We're reviewing the Court of Appeals decision.
Correct. And we can
and the assignment,
and so if it's remanded
and
back,
the assignment of error challenges the Court of Appeals decision that the best interest was not the right test.
Correct. And the majority.
So how do we get to the merits of the trial court's determinations with regard to undue delay and the hardship on the parties if the trial court has?
Because I think Thompson addresses those issues.
Well, I don't care what Thompson addresses. I'm not worried about what this case addresses and what is in front of us by virtue of the assignments of error, because there's no cross error.
Well, the raising of whether the standard that was used in Thompson is correct, I think is...
That's just the best interest, whether that's the right test or not.
Well, they've also addressed in their briefs all of the other issues.
Well, they talked about a lot of things,
well,
that doesn't mean it's encompassed by the assignment of error. That doesn't mean it's encompassed by the assignment of error.
Well, I think it goes to the good cause that is raised, and good cause is an umbrella over the other factors, too. So it incorporates that by necessity as to whether there was good cause or not, and that was the issue. So good cause does overlap by an umbrella, incorporating both the advanced stage issue and the inconvenience to witnesses. Let me talk about the bonding, though, because that's an issue that Hollyfield...
Has he answered your question?
No, not really, but go ahead.
And my question, I don't believe, was answered either, but go ahead. Your time is limited.
Can we demand it back?
Go ahead.
We're familiar with the best interest because it's in all of our statutes, whether it applies to a transfer or whether it applies to an ultimate decision. But how do you help me with how the Court of Appeals comes up with this entirely new standard, sort of out of nowhere?
I'll do that. Frankly, I think technically under Hollyfield and the RML case out of Illinois, they talk about the fact that you've got long-term bonding in that case, and there could be harm to take kids from bonding. And the tribe understands that in this case. So we have, if you read every single case of every other state, I have never read one where we have a duality of time and NOVO appeals, which by the inherent process of our Virginia procedures causes a delay, as Justice Lemons kind of pointed out. We do have a de novo. The fact is it was appealed by them because they neglected to have the right witness for whatever reason, so that shouldn't inure against the tribe. But in any event, we do have that dual context that causes delay, and anyone that does family knows that children every day increase their bonding. But that doesn't eliminate... So what the Court of Appeals has done here, I think, is come up with a wonderful balancing of how you can look at the factors under good cause for Virginia. We're talking about this state, not Montana, not North Dakota, or all the other states. So if there was a transfer and immediate removal of the children as a result of that order. I know the order's entered and the kids are going. That would be probably harmful in this case based on the testimony we have, although the evidence was not based on expert Indian culture. But
can I finish answering your question?
Yes.
It seems like you keep getting away from who makes the decision to what the decision is. Just transferring it to the tribal court doesn't mean that they're going to do anything at all, does
exactly.
it? Well, then how does best interest have anything to do with that transfer? Well, hasn't the federal government already said it's in the best interest of children to be tried in the tribal court?
If this court feels that it ought to be no best interest standard at all for transfer, we would agree with that. I'm just saying that we can accept the Court of Appeals decision because the tribe is not. We just don't want to make a precedent of saying best interest overbroad applies to any case. We would be in the extreme minority. We don't want Virginia thumbing its nose at the act.
Well, let me ask you, do you agree with me that the federal government has already said the best interest
yes.
of the child is to go to the tribal court?
Sure. It's kind of like Hague, where you don't decide the merits. It's where it's done.
Exactly.
Okay, well, if Justice Millett is correct, then why isn't the Court of Appeals standard wrong as well? Because they don't call it best interest. They call it where there's a substantial risk of harm to the children.
Judge,
that's still looking at the interests of the children.
The
they just
well,
let me finish, please.
Yeah.
It just makes the determination, the bar a little higher, but it's still looking at the interests of the children.
I agree that the tribe should be able to decide if there's substantial risk. These are not...
So do you agree with the court? But you said you agree with the Court of Appeals standard.
Well, we can live with it if it's affirmed, but our preference would be to say that the best interest, and we took that position all the way. Don't forget, we didn't.
Yeah, but that's, you didn't assign crosshair.
At the trial level, we didn't know what Thompson was going to. I mean, we didn't know about Thompson.
Right.
That was
we'd like to get it right, though.
Why?
Yeah. That's part of
what
we're
doing. I think the easy answer is to say that the standard should be no best interest at all. Period. Do the transfer and don't.
Well, that makes sense. If you're not going to immediately put children on a plane and move them to Oklahoma
well,
or Arizona.
That it's not going to happen.
Well, that's what's in this record. I have to make the decision in this case on this record, and that's what's in this record.
Well, there is part of the record that Mrs. Herbert did say that we're not going to take it. There was another witness that said they weren't going to take them right away. There was another one that said earlier they had planned on it. I mean, how can we...
If
it's remanded back, that's an issue that the trial court, I guess, under Thompson, under the appeal in this case, they said we're going to send it back and use Thompson, and then we're going to come in with evidence that is going to say these children are not going to be removed as a result of the transfer, and then I think they're bound to that opinion.
How are they bound to it?
Excuse me?
If the transfer is made, and
yes.
a week later the tribal court says... We want the children to come out here, and they'll be out here for the next year during our proceedings. How is that bind? How can the state court that has already given up jurisdiction then exercise jurisdiction not over the children but over the tribal court, which has just thumbed its nose at the proffer that was made in the circuit court? It
Let me
can't
read you from
is the answer.
Case.
There is no jurisdiction that allows it to occur.
Right.
So if that is indeed the answer, and I've just answered my own question, how then... Thank you very much. I was very direct about that. Now, hang on one moment. If that's the case, why can't the circuit court, before the transfer decision is made, ask the question, is there the potential for substantial harm to the children if they're going to spend the next year somewhere other than the only home that they've known?
The answer is you have to trust the integrity of tribal courts. These are courts that are legitimate with experts, with social workers that are going to do that. Let me read from the Armel case, just for a minute, Your Honor. This is a case where that exact bonding issue came up, and it says, as stated previously, however, our determination in this case are not related to placement but to jurisdictional considerations. We note that the first order entered by the Potawatomi Tribal Court was to have Eleanor remain with her foster parents while appropriate investigations were conducted. We have no reason to believe that the Potawatomi Tribal Court, given the unique aspects of this case, will not continue to be sensitive to the best interest of Eleanor. We have a case record of the same tribe doing the same thing.
Okay. I'm not worried so much about this case as I am the next one and the next one and the next one. And your answer was... You have to trust the integrity of the tribal court. And I have no reason to doubt the integrity of this tribal court. Do I have to trust the integrity of every tribal court in every case from now until the end of time?
I can't answer that because I don't know all the other courts. I think
well,
we need
if
to
that,
say standard.
If indeed that is the case, then should we not at least? And let me ask you this as well. Do we have to trust the integrity of every other state court anywhere in the nation. If there is a situation where you are trying to determine do the interests of this child get adjudicated in Virginia, or do the interests of this child get adjudicated in a state court in California? Is the answer we have to trust the integrity of the California state court, and consequently we must go ahead and permit the transfer?
Well, under UCCJEA, there are required communications between judges to make that decision, and so that's a case-by-case determination with judges and courts. We have that set up in our UCCJEA. We don't have it set up here. This is a higher standard of the preference of tribal courts than just the UCCJEA, which talks about judges talking about that.
And since 1978, the United States Supreme Court has never stepped into one of these cases to say to a state, sorry, you just must trust the integrity of every tribal court under every circumstance, no matter what. You cannot ever make that preliminary determination about substantial harm within your own court system. The Supreme Court has never said that, has it?
Hollifield, no, because Hollifield was a 119A, this is a 119-11B, which is
But there have been many cases that struggle with this exact same issue without any sort of guidance from the federal courts.
Well, most of the courts have not struggled with the premise.
Some of them have.
A minority, but the majority, I think, are more well-reasoned when you look at the purposes of the Act, and by saying that we have to use some best interest standard, you're basically gutting the purpose of the statute, which is to give the tribal courts, which have more expertise in this area, as to what is needed to preserve the culture and the tribal loss of.
I am very concerned about the culture and the tribal, about the culture of the Native American tribes throughout the nation. I'm sorry, but I have a great concern as well about the best interests of the children who are under the jurisdiction of Virginia courts. And that's why this case is here, because we are struggling with that issue. It is not quite so black and white as you seem to think.
This is a threshold jurisdictional issue as to who decides that. Not that you're talking about the underlying results of that, and all of the cases have usually distinguished.
No, I'm not talking about the underlying results. Judge McCullough made it clear that it's looking at substantial harm before the transfer is made, about whether the transfer itself is going to.
And they said that he defines that by saying if they remain in the status quo pending the ultimate adjudication, that is not then substantial harm. He said that. That's part of the basis of their opinion. The Potawatomi tribe will honor that.
Mr. Deal,
I've got to.
I understand. We'll have to deal with that. You're a veteran of the trial courts and the appellate courts of the Commonwealth. I happen to know that. You would have to agree that we, generally speaking, decide our cases based on a record that is before us, not a record that is in the future that we don't know about. And we decide it based upon the decisions that are actually made, not the decisions that might be made by the trial court. With that preface, in this case, the trial judge said, and the question of timeliness is, of course, one of the issues that the trial court dealt with, and you can tell by my questions that I'm not entirely impressed with that rationale. But the trial court also said that the case could not adequately be presented in a tribal court without undue hardship to the parties. Then he refers to the testimony of Dr. Stolberg, which he says speaks for itself. And then he says in his ruling, I was relying as well on my experience with young children that sudden and immediate and permanent removal from the home where attachment bonds were formed would have been extremely harmful to the children. Now, I've gone through Dr. Stolberg's testimony, and everywhere you see a little red flag, there's testimony about immediate harm to these children. I'm not going to waste your time here by going through each one of them. So here's my question. We have a court that has a ruling. It includes the question that Thompson ultimately decided, which is immediate harm to the children. There is testimony that supports it. If we uphold Thompson, why shouldn't we uphold the actual decision of the trial court in this case on the record that is presented? Why should it be remanded?
Because you're basically then putting the cart before the horse and gutting the ability of the trial court to look at all of the evidence and say, you're right, they should stay where they are, which they have done in the past. In
no,
some
no, we're
cases.
Talking about that decision. The decision to transfer was decided by this circuit court, on two grounds.
Right.
The second ground is exactly the issue in Thompson.
I think that using the best interest, that was the way she framed it. She was looking at a broader best interest standard and not a substantial harm issue. But even if we use Dr. Stolberg as substantial harm, there still is the opportunity to see if there's substantial harm based on the cultural standards that they have more expertise on that we're denying and gutting. It's an insult to the tribe to say you can't make that decision, and they should. It may be very likely that they stay where they are, but that's for the tribe to decide, and that guts the statute by jumping the cart before the horse. This is a jurisdictional issue at this stage.
All right.
Good morning, if it pleases the court. My name is George Edwards. I have been the attorney for the mother from day one. It has always been the position of the mother, who is a Potawatomi tribal member. Howbeit, she may be only a 1/16th blooded Potawatomi.
That doesn't matter. She's falls within the
statute. And she is proud of it. And she wants her children to have that culture. It has always been her position that the federal government has said they will decide what will become of her children who are also Indian, and that unless there are some good cause to the contrary. Unfortunately, federal government gives guidelines. They give nothing definite. And sneaking into there is best interest of the children. However, anybody who's practiced domestic relations, like everybody involved, when best interest comes into mind, they assume 20-124.3, the full nine steps that you've got to go through.
Counsel, I presume you practice in federal court as well?
Only for court martial, sir.
Okay. Would you agree that when Congress wants a case to be transferred from a state court to a federal court without there being any intermediate determinations made by the state court, Congress knows how to do that? Would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay. Would you agree that in this case, Congress has left a yawning gap about what the state court should do, and that 36 years have passed without either Congress correcting that or without the Supreme Court entering into the fray?
Absolutely, Judge, much like immigration.
So under those circumstances, argue if you would,
yes, sir,
that we can't consider substantial harm to the child because it is trumped by the wishes of the mother.
I would say the mother's wishes parallel the code more so than that of the Department of Social Services. The good cause shown in this, she says, I want this, but I am aware there is good cause that must be shown. Good cause has given us several factors, but are not defined. To be quite frank, I pretty much eliminated the speed that because of the trial de novo, because of trial technical, the technical advances that we have. Most backward countries in the world now, everybody's walking down the road with a cell phone.
Okay. Now, Councilman, I appreciate that answer. Follow-up question?
Yes, sir.
Now that we've acknowledged that we are permitted to look at good cause, that it is not an automatic transfer,
correct,
as the Congress is capable of directing, we are permitted to look at good cause. We have the Stolberg testimony on one side of the scale. What do we have in opposition to that on the mother's side of the scale? What has the mother put up that contradicts or contravenes the Stolberg testimony?
Well, number one, should, and that was one of the arguments that was brought forth at the appellate court, should that testimony have been admitted to start out with, because the standard shows there should be a decision on whether or not to transfer. If you don't transfer, then you take the evidence. And that's
but the Stolberg testimony was based upon the transfer decision itself, not the overall best interest of the children.
Dr. Stolberg had never been with the Indians. He'd been with these two children for 2 hours and never met with their parents.
Okay, so there's one point that goes to the weight of the testimony. What else is there in the record?
All right, the other counter-argument that we addressed during that period of time, not one person appeared as required by our statute and federal statute as an expert on Potawatomi Indians. No testimony whatsoever was given.
Is there an assignment of error based upon that?
It was one only at the appellate court. Okay. Yes, sir. It was not before this court.
Can you answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Your time's expired.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We gave the appellees about 3.5 extra minutes. So I'll give the appellants 3.5 extra minutes for rebuttal, however you want to divide it up.
Very enlightened and graciously giving me all 3 minutes, Your Honor.
All right.
I think a very important point with regard to these children is that they are citizens of the Potawatomi Nation. They're also citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia. As citizens of the Potawatomi Nation, even if they are adopted, they still enjoy all of the rights and privileges of that citizenship. So when we talk about their cultural ties and the significance of being members of that tribe, wherever the proceedings are held, there's not going to be a diminishment in any way, shape, or form of their citizenship in the Indian tribe. There may be a diminishment of their citizenship of the Commonwealth of Virginia, but I still believe at this point with that dual citizenship, the Commonwealth of Virginia has a responsibility to these children and to their welfare. That is why the federal government gave the states the flexibility to make those decisions, to hear good cause not to transfer. And
Counsel, as you know, we are not bound by decisions of the Court of Appeals. As you can tell from the questions, we are quite familiar with Thompson and are grappling with how to address that. What argument, if any, do you have with the framework that and the standards that Judge McCullough established in the Thompson decision?
I think that it limits the flexibility of the trial court. For example, when the trial court talked about the advanced stage of the proceedings, that wasn't our direction, so to speak. I forget which just said this, but what we were talking about was the timeliness in terms of the children's history, that the tribe failed to intervene in a timely manner in the overall history. Unfortunately, that became the advanced stage of the proceeding. We never said that. Our position all along was the court's ability to find good cause based on the history between the tribe and this family, older children, these particular children. The tribe knew in June of 2010 that family was falling apart. The tribe removed two other children of this mother from that home. Why didn't it remove the twins? It didn't. It let Dinwiddie DSS continue to try to provide rehabilitative services to the parents pursuant to a CHINS proceeding. I think if we are looking at Thompson, it says very specifically what should happen. In and of itself, we believe that ties the hands of the locality which is dealing with these issues, and it is a very local issue. Each agency, quite frankly, approaches it differently. For example,
how does it tie your hands?
Well, the standard of emotional harm to the children is pretty clear, but it almost says that the guidelines examples are law in Virginia. In other words, it refers to the advanced stage of the proceedings, and it refers to the undue hardship. It talks about the undue hardship, and the guardian ad litem referred to this in terms of the technological changes that have taken place. We don't have those technological changes in Dinwiddie County. They're not available to us. If the tribe were to come to Dinwiddie County, I think that it runs into some procedural issues despite the regulation that council referred to. There's nothing that says that Dinwiddie County has to participate in that, or DSS has to participate in that proceeding. Nothing whatsoever.
You don't have to. I mean, that's true.
Right, but we're the ones with all the evidence. So then what happens?
Well, why wouldn't you? I guess I don't understand, because I thought the whole thing is you wanted them to stay in Dinwiddie so you could do what's best for them. It never crossed my mind that you would say, well, if it goes to the tribe, then we're not going to help.
I don't know who's saying that we're not going to help, Your Honor. I think what I'm trying to say is that the decision would have to be made, what role would DSS take? For example, Fairfield did not participate in the decision in Thompson. They opted out. And part of the reason is this is incredibly expensive, and we have very limited funds available. We may choose not to spend our funds in that manner.
Ms. O'Donnell, as we close out the time on this case, I can't help but remind all the lawyers in this case that these are children that we're dealing with. I know you're aware of that, but even the Federal Register is aware of it. And I'm reading from it. Long periods of uncertainty concerning the future are generally regarded as harmful to the well-being of children. The Thompson case was accepted for appeal on this court's docket.
Yes.
And everybody got together and resolved it.
Yes.
There's still time to do that in this case.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Your time's expired. Court will take a short recess.
All rise.